He may have been 7 years old, and he was beside himself with excitement in anticipation of the journey that his family was about to make, a sea voyage. But he didn't really understand what was at stake. His family was risking everything to make a new life in a new land, and there were many obstacles and tremendous dangers ahead, including treacherous seas and real-world pirates. And as it happens, only half of the Tran family made it to America from Vietnam, and young Howard, his mother, and his other siblings had to wait a number of years until everyone was reunited in California. That was a major journey in Howard Tran's life, but when it came time for him to name a series of sculptural works he, as an artist, created, he chose the title Han Chinh, Vietnamese for journey, and in these pieces we see, for example, one head on top of another, and on, and realize that for Tran, perhaps more fundamental than geographical journeys might be the journey in life we make trying to understand who we are, where, and if we belong. And how could Tran have ever imagined when he and his family set out in those small, vulnerable boats from the coast of Vietnam, that he would return someday and, as we're told, journey from North to South Vietnam by bus, boats, kayaks, rickshaws, and on foot, with a group of young people to explore the cities and countryside where his life began, offering this geographical journey to his students at Lycoming College in hopes of helping them with their life journeys as humans who just happened to be studying art. Howard Tran is a professor of art at Lycoming College in Williamsport, teaching sculpture, drawing, figure modeling, and ceramics. He received his MFA in sculpture from Boston University, and he exhibits his sculpture, painting, and mixed media works nationally. To coincide with the broadcast premiere of the new PBS documentary, The Vietnam War by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, during this week and next on WVIA-TV, we invited Howard Tran to the WVIA studios to talk with us about his life and work.
I was born in Tây Ninh, which is about an hour west of Ho Chi Minh City, so it's in the south of Vietnam. I was born there and grew up there until I was 12. And it was an interesting time because that was right after the war. And it was complicated because I wasn't in school because we had made so many attempts to escape Vietnam that I missed so much school that my parents just end up keeping us at home and trying to homeschool. So that my growing up in Vietnam is quite secluded away from a lot of kids, and just staying at home, making things with whatever I can find around the house, and destroying things that my grandparents think I was doing. So my childhood is quite different in that sense.
You say your grandparents were from China. Was there animosity between the Vietnamese and Chinese at the time you were growing up?
Yes, it was unusual at that time. Yeah, my grandparent came to Vietnam in the mid-1940, pretty much at the end of the World War II, and they immigrated to Vietnam, and my father came with them, but my mom was born in Vietnam, to a Chinese family, so the same region. So yes, so both set up my grandparents from China. And at that time, after the Vietnam War, in the early 80s, late 70s, Vietnam was fighting with China about borders, territories. And so there were hostility among the Vietnamese communist government and the Chinese Vietnamese who live in Vietnam. Something with the Chinese, with the communists, what they did was basically everything was privatized. Business was privatized. But when they came in, they kind of took businesses and state owned them, and they hire you to run the business. So, for example, my grandparents, the gas station, they would come in, take it, and then hire you to run it. So there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of confusion, and a lot of fear among the Chinese Vietnamese at that time in Vietnam.
Were there echoes of the war, the aftermath of the war? Did you see evidence around you?
Visually, yes. About maybe 20 minutes, there's one hills that in that region, there's the temples in that on that hill. That's the only thing, that's the only structure on that whole hills. And there's a lot of fighting there with the guerrilla and the American and the South Vietnamese army. So the temple pretty much bombed pretty good. You see all the Buddhist statue blown up, and the roof was big hole in the roof. And so as a kid, we would climb up that mountain and would see those structures. And then, you know, you see tanks or part of a plane here and there. It just, there's a lot of fear. So we're told not to talk bad about the government at all. And it was just a very hush-hush kind of thing. If you're going to talk about anything politics related, you kind of keep it quiet and inside you can't. I just remember there's one government official who would come and walk in the house and would go in the kitchen and eat things. And we were afraid of him because, he, you know, he's a government, so we don't want to cause any trouble. And if I feel, it always feel weird because of a sense of position of power and what he was doing. So it would feel a little bit weird to me.
I'm sure as a little one trying to make sense of all that, you could pick up on the anxiety.
Oh, yeah. We do talk a lot. At least my parents talk a lot. Or my grandparents and uncle and aunts do talk a lot, you know, about just hush-hush and not. That's the reason why we left, too. It's just a lot of that. Basically, my family, my parents and five kids, they have five kids, and we're trying to escape in the late 70s. And my dad went on a different boat, took two older siblings, and made it through. My mom took three of the younger siblings. I'm in the middle one, so I'm on the younger group. And we got caught by the Coast Guard. So we end up get caught and stay back. And my dad took off. And boat died after a few days and somehow got picked up by one of the container cargo ship and got them into Indonesia after 10 days, I think. So we were separated for 5 years, and we make a couple more attempts, but didn't make it, caught again. So finally, my dad sponsored us as soon as he got to America. And so for that 5 years, we waited for the paperwork to go through. But my mom wanted to get that before the paperwork and could go through and, you know, go as an immigrant. But we get caught.
When you read the headlines today, people getting into boats in the Mediterranean, it must bring all of that back.
It does bring all that. It does, because for me, it's the same thing. It's exactly identical thing, you know. Why do people leave? And, you know, they had to have some reason. And it's sad to see that Americans are not very active with helping them instead of fearing them more than that, and instead of helping them. And that's kind of upsetting to see.
Speaking from your own experience, you know how dangerous it is. You could have lost your father.
It is. When I was young, the first time I left, I was seven. And my parents said that we're going on a vacation. And it was exciting as a kid because you go on boats and all that stuff. You know, you didn't know that it's going to be a dangerous thing. My parents didn't talk about that at all. But when I came to America and started reading about it, and there was a really high percentage of die at sea or get captured by pirates. And I was horrified. And I went to my parents and was like, okay, did you know that taking this risk was really high? And they say yes, you know, because of the urgency that they saw at their time, that basically they look at five of us, and if they don't do something, we can't really go to college in Vietnam just because of we were on the losing side. And so it was a lot harder to succeed. So my parents like, what are we going to do? You want to, you know, be poor, or you want to succeed and take a risk? And that's how my father responded to why he decided to go, even though he knew the consequences, the risk is high.
Where did you wind up first?
I end up in California. That's where my dad got to, in San Jose, California. So I grew up there, and 12 years old until college, and then went off.
What about making things all of this time? Was your artwork helping you keep anchored in this very stressful time?
Making things in Vietnam was, that was part of my childhood that I really miss when I came to America. When I got to America, there's so much stimulation with TVs and materialistic stuff that I got caught into it and stopped making thing, you know. And I feel really, I didn't realize that until I started doing art again that that's what I was missing. So that, for that, from 12 to 19, 18, I feel lost. Maybe that's just a transition time too, but when I started making art again, when I took a class in college, and that really reminded me of my childhood experience, and that really, really inspired me to really go back and continue, just go on the art track and focus on that. And it just that sense of, that feeling when you make something as a kid, and I just have a similar feeling, so that's really pleasant to be able to feel that again.
When you were still in Vietnam, what images were catching your attention? Were you interested in the Buddhist temples and their images, for example?
I mean, in Vietnam after the war, art wasn't part of the family, my family at all. I mean, and especially in the third world country, it's not a, as you compare it to America, a lot of arts and people talk about it, but there it was just all about surviving. And for me, TV only on at night, and if you're lucky, you have electricity, you know. So that was the only source of visual stimulation. Beside that, you know, the Buddhist temple is quite elegant and interesting. What some of the visual that really keep me coming back to is, thing got pretty deteriorated, the buildings, because of people not fixing it up, and so a lot of layer of paint and mold and whatever, all the growth and weather walls and just a lot of texture from, you know, thing falling apart. So that, some of that texture really still come back to me.
If we look at your works, we see something that might suggest calligraphy in some of them.
It's inspired by Buddhism, yes. And some of that is calligraphy, some of the Chinese texts inspire, yes.
You went on to college. Did you ultimately major in art?
I went to college starting college with majoring in business, because the funny thing is that I didn't know there was an art major. I happened to take a drawing class, and the teacher really inspiring and encouraged that I consider seriously. And it was complicated because my father always tell me to assimilate and don't make any fuss in America, because this is not your country kind of attitude. So I'm pretty, you know, staying back and feel like not really confident I can do much of anything. But I went to a community college, and the professor there was Asian. And for me, just to see him in the position of power just really inspired me, that if he can do, so can I. So that really helps me, to give me confidence just to continue on. And what he was talking to me about was, you know, I can do this, basically. So that was, for me, that was a symbolic moment in my life, because before that was just all business and art wasn't a thing. So, but I always knew that I always liked to make things. So that kind of tied into art, basically. And also the arts really encouraged you to think about things, and that really fit well with me too. So that combination's great.
How did you then proceed to find your voice and the medium or materials you decided to use to make your own?
It was tricky, because I feel like I have to catch up, because art wasn't in my vocabulary at all until college, and I have to catch up because I don't know much about art history. I don't know anything. So I went to undergraduate and graduate school right after. So I feel like I'm always catching up. And I think recently, the last few years, where I feel like I caught up. So all this time, I feel like everything is very open. You know, everything is open to possibility. What makes it even more complicated is because of my Chinese background, and then a Vietnamese background, and then the American background. So constantly trying to figure out, who am I, where do I fit in? And that question in its own, art kind of have to deal with it too. So, you know, so art is a reflection of who you are. So I'm struggling with that for many years, just to you know, just because of that culture shift. So I find that arts for me is the same thing. You know, I have this two body of works. One of them is more symbolic, non-objective, and there's more sculptural, realistic, figurative kind of part. So I feel like it's the range of my experience kind of flow within that range. The sculptural figurative is more my experience now. The non-objective seem to imply the future, something more spiritual, something more subconscious, or something further away that I want to know more about, but I'm not quite sure.
They're not separate. There's a dialogue between them.
I mean, it's all connected, but the process is quite different. With the non-objective, it's quite intuitive, and your mind was on automatic mode, and you just kind of go. With the sculpture, you really have to think ahead and see all the steps. So it's quite different, but I feel like it's part of who I am. I'm not this one person. I'm not just American. I'm Vietnamese Chinese American. All those experiences form who I am, so I can't really leave any of it out, you know?
There's a series that you have that translates into English as Journey. Is that the sculptural work?
Oh, Hanjin. Yes, that's the sculptural. I made it in clay first and then cast it in burlap. Yeah, I started out with clay with most sculpture and then experiment with different materials to cast it in. So I cast it in rice, I cast it in burlap, I cast it in hemp, I cast it in paper. I mean, just always looking for material that get closer to what I'm thinking about, what I want to express. So I'm always trying something new. So
does it get shaggy?
I have to dip it in something called pulver pulp. It basically is a fabric hardener. I'm allergic to resin, so I can't put in resin. So I use a fabric hardener. So dip in the fabric hardener and then press into the mold that I make from the clay. So that's how I cast them.
You have some items here with you that you might use to shape the clay.
Yes. This is some of the tool that I have just for working with clay. I like to mostly use my hand just because I like the texture from my hand and my fingerprint with it too. And then the tool, you know, sometimes I want to create contrast, or moving a whole chunk of clay around, it's quicker with some of the tool than, yes.
Is the Journey series continuing? Are you on to something else?
I mean, it's all related. With that series about who I am, my connection to the past, to the future, to the present. For a long time, you know, just question who I am. And I see myself as not just me, is what define me is my grandparent and great-grandparent, my parent, me, myself, my kids and my grandkids. Who I am is not just me, it's all connected. But that's what that piece, that multiple head, which kind of represent that's my self-portrait, basically.
With your Vietnamese, Chinese, American background, how do you size up the Western way of looking at our ancestors?
Yeah, the two cultures, the East and the West, is quite different how we perceive families and connection with the past. For the East, the philosophy is all about connection and family connection and community kind of focus. It's all about community. In the West, the focus is more on individuality, and the self is more important. So that kind of dictate a lot of how each culture, people in each culture interact, respond to different things. So that's the core of it, really.
Do people at school or in the neighborhood or on airplanes or anywhere ever bring up the relationship between the United States and Vietnam, the history of the war, or do they not go there?
In general, not much of a go there. I think it's afraid of offending me more than anything, I think. But I don't mind talking about it. But there's people who are interested, you know, just because a lot of them have their grandfather in the war, or a lot of people have grandparents' age in the war, so they do, you know, want to talk about it. So yes.
What kinds of things do they ask?
I think it's interesting. I can feel that their perception of Vietnam is a lot of it based on what they saw on the media, on TV, not the real Vietnam. So I have to kind of I know where their perspective come from, and so I have to kind of add part nuance to it that kind of, you know, give it more real context than just the image of the war from TV.
Like the ancient nature of the culture.
Yes. And even Buddhism influenced by, you know, in that region of the war world. And just there's so many nuances that doesn't really... Just like I took students to Vietnam, what their perception of what Vietnam is, and when they get there, and how their mind kind of have to shift because it's not what they... For example, I took the Vietnam trip twice already with students from Lycoming. And the first time, one student asked, my parents want to know if the war is still going on, you know, a thing like that. Or it's very dangerous to go to Vietnam because of the war. I mean, this is like 2000-something, and people still ask that kind of question. So I have to try and understand where they're coming from and slowly ease them into it. But when they get to Vietnam, the people are pretty friendly, so it's not a bad transition.
You take them to a museum or museums?
Yes, art museum and history museum and war museum. And there's a war remnant museum in Ho Chi Minh City. And it was tough for a lot of American students just because all suddenly looking at war from the Vietnamese perspective, from the North Vietnamese perspective, the communist perspective and how what Americans have done there, which we don't hear much about unless you're really researching it in depth. So there's a lot of images or action that American soldiers took, or the policy that was, you know, harsh, or I don't know. So a lot of image of Agent Orange kid that born deformed, or torture that was, so is all there. So every time we go, that part is harsh after, because people are crying afterwards. So but that's what we're there for, just to have a different perspective. I like coming for the past 15 years. I try to, you know, get my students to understand diversity and talk about it a lot. And I found that it doesn't really last long because they walk out of the class and it's over. But I figure that the only way to really truly comprehend or understand it is to go there, or go to any country really, to experience diversity, because you can't talk about it. You have to feel it, you have to smell it, you have to taste it, you have to see it. It had to be a real experience. So the Vietnam trip was, you know, to get them to be in someone else's perspective and still have their perspective and reconcile and understand it in a more complex and nuanced that they wouldn't be able to get if they read a book or something. So that's why going to another country is important. So the art department goes to every other year, goes to different countries. And last year was to Vietnam.
What did you see in their work on their return? Any difference?
In general, yes. It's not just particularly about the artwork they make, but their worldview change. And that, I think, is much more important than the one moment change. I want it to be a lifetime of change. So they might not do much, but at least I can see the ideas about what the art is more complex and more nuanced to it, more open than kind of narrow and straightforward. So I think that's, for me, it's like a seed that's going to grow for the rest of their life. And that's what I'm hoping to plant that seed.
Do you have seed images in your drawings, the curved forms that we sometimes see?
A lot of these, is I start out with a baby shape and it kind of simplifies into that shape. It's like a baby. It's symbolic, you know, it's rebirth, being born again, or transformation. It's just a lot of it symbolic, because I see myself as, I don't believe in anything as absolute, you know, it's constantly changing. Constantly evolving, constantly transforming, constantly become better, or trying to be better. So it's a constantly moving forward, that's what I see.
You have on the table some materials you might use in a collage.
This is the offering, Buddhism offering paper. I remember growing up, my grandparents would have this offering every 2 weeks with the new moon and the full moon. And the offering would be to the altar of the ancestor, or the earth, and just a lot of symbolic kind of altar that have to do with the earth and ancestor, a lot of it most of the time. And this will get burned after it would put on the altar and offer it and burn incense and say a few words, and this kind of put in the bowl and burn it. So for me, I just like the texture of it, and it's kind of a hint at the Vietnamese slash Chinese culture that I want to include. So, you know, so I've been collecting a lot of these where I can find them.
Depending on the impulse, then, you might just work that in when you're creating one of your drawings?
Yes, just I want to include that part of me.
You've gone back to lecture, have you?
Yes, I was on sabbatical there 6-7 years ago or 8 years ago, and I left to live there for 6 months. So I meet up with artists there and colleges there. So I did talk about my work at the Ho Chi Minh College of Fine Arts and kind of see what they're up to there and learn more about what they're working on. And so I meet up with the artist, the teacher and artist there. But also, there's a large group of Vietnamese American or Vietnamese foreign American artists that return to Vietnam and live and work. So there's that group of artists there that are very active in pushing the arts there. And they are quite successful with raising money to put programs together. So that's exciting to see.
You've talked about the way visiting Vietnam opens up your students and, though painful, might allow them to have a richer, deeper experience of life and the world. Is that in any way how you see art itself, the visual arts? If we interact with a drawing or a piece of sculpture and let ourselves really experience it, that we might somehow be affected or enriched?
When I'm making it, I think it's my process of me trying to process my experience as a human at this time and place. And I hope that, you know, anyone who look at my work, that if they find something there that get them inspired or think about something, great. If not, it's okay. I mean, but it's not, I don't think my intention is to change anyone's minds. My intention is to work through my experience and working through my thoughts about what's going on in the world.
Is there then a sense of common humanity? If we recognize something that you might be wrestling with or expressing, that we ultimately have something to share?
Yeah, I agree. Art is really that common connection that we all have. That art is a reminder that it's there, and we are very much more similar than we are different. And the arts allow us to be in touch with more of the humanity side of our existence than the materialistic or the distraction that we are experiencing.
You talked about the destroyed temples and some of the painful images that we might see in the war museum. Your images, some of them are just exquisitely beautiful. Is beauty something you think about at all?
I think naturally, this is what I care about, and that's normally the outcome of it. But I feel, I guess I'm more optimistic than pessimistic as a person. I think that's kind of translate to that too as well. But I'm aware of all the complexity of all the parts, you know. But I choose to emphasize the positive side of humanity, you know. I'm more interested in, even though I feel like I go through a lot of different stages, and some of it was really hard, but I'm always moving forward, trying to be a better person than I am today. And that's what I'm striving for, you know, just a constant trying to figure it out, trying to be better.
And then when you work with your students, you hope to open their hearts?
Heart and mind. The mind first, and then the heart will go with it.
Howard Tran, professor of art at Lycoming College in Williamsport, speaking with us about his life and work in connection with the broadcast premiere of the new PBS documentary, The Vietnam War, by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, airing during this week and next on WVIA-TV. For more information on the web, lycoming.edu, and there you can find images that the students Howard Tran took to Vietnam created from their experience there. And Howard Tran's own website is hotransculpture.com, HAOTRAN sculpture.com, HAOTRAN sculpture.com, and you can see much of his work and read about his extensive gallery experience and his education and so much more. That's lycoming.edu or hotransculpture.com.